Here we go. Parshat Noach. Now, Parshat Noach, I would divide up into seven parts. We have pre-flood, then we have the flood, then we have to discuss why there was a flood, then leaving the ark, then, you know, what happened when Noach left the ark and the whole weird stuff with his kids, then Migdal Bavel, and then the genealogy at the end. Now, Parsha Noach, we said before that Bereshit is maybe the longest Parsha as far as years, like about 1,500 years. Noach's also up there, I'd say about 500 years. From the birth of Noach's sons until Avraham, it was told, Lech Lecha Me'artzecha, so about 500 years. Now, Noach is described to us in the beginning of the Parsha as a tzaddik, Bidorotav, right? Very famous idea. He was righteous in his generation. And there's a machlokas. What exactly does that mean? So the two views, as is well known, is that he was a super duper tzaddik, right? He, even in such a terrible generation, he was able to be a tzaddik. Or, compared to his generation, he was a tzaddik. As the Gemara says, Yesh Dorshim Oto Leshvach, Yesh Dorshim Oto Lignai. Right? Are we saying, wow, look at Noach. He's like, you know, the kid from public school in Harlem made into Harvard. Wow, that's amazing. Or we say, yeah, he was valedictorian of his community college. Big deal, right? So like, what do we, you know, how do we view Noach? The question that bothers me is, why would anyone want to say anything bad about Noach? I mean, here it is. We have generation after generation. There's a decline. From the time of Adam, it's getting worse, 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 worse. And now the Torah says that he's tzaddik. Why would anyone want to say that he's not a true tzaddik? And the answer that's given is because of his silence. And compared to Avraham, when Avraham's told that the wicked city of Sodom is going to be destroyed, Avraham goes to argue with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And yet, when Noah's told the entire world is going to be destroyed, he keeps his mouth shut. And if so, this is the idea. It's really, it's interesting. You know, the Torah goes out of its way, adds extra words, not to say a behema tzmeya, but instead says a behema she'eno tzmeya, eino tahora. So why do we now hint towards some sort of negativity towards Noach? It's not hinting towards Noach, but rather talking about how amazing Avraham is. How great Avraham is. Because the truth is, who would have thought you could argue with God? Right? God says, I'm doing this. Not like anyone would have thought on their own. So the negativity towards Noach, I think, is more of trying to highlight how amazing Avraham Avinu was. To me, what's most interesting about this machlokas is who said it. Okay, we often, you know, we know. Like I said, anyone who's ever learned Rashi on Chumash knows that, you know, Yesh Dorshim Oto Leshvach, Yesh Dorshim Oto Lignai. But we're not usually that familiar with who were the authors of these statements. So if you look and you see, it's very interesting. Rabbi Yochanan is the one that says Lignai. Yeah, Noach the tzaddik, but like I said, he was a valedictorian of the junior college, right? In his generation, he's considered tzaddik. Big deal. But who's the one that says it was amazing what Noach did? Reish Lakish. Now, what do we know about Reish Lakish? Reish Lakish went off the derech. Reish Lakish was like a gladiator, and he was running with a gang. And Reish Lakish knows how hard it is to break away from your peers and to say, no, I'm not going to be like everybody. And not just him, not just was Noach, his whole family was righteous enough to be saved. So Reish Lakish has a very good viewpoint to appreciate Noach and to say, you were able, in the society that you were in, to stay frum. That's impressive. So I think when you look at who said it, it makes these machlokas all the more interesting. Okay, he's told to build an ark because the flood is coming. We get the dimensions of the ark, which is interesting, like why we need dimensions. And we're told that the ark is 30 amos high and 50 amos wide and 300 amos long. So I went on Google. I wanted to go figure this out. It's like two-thirds the size of the Titanic. Okay, fine. Now, why the need? I mean, couldn't God just have destroyed the world and then brought all the animals back? He did it once. Probably could do it again, right? Like, what was the need for Noah to build the ark? Couldn't he miraculously just save all the animals? I mean, the fish got saved, right? Couldn't the animals all be suspended somehow and be saved? Why did Noah have to do this? It would seem that God wanted man to be an active participant. Now, how could he fit all the animals in the ark? So the Netziv says, an interesting idea. He's bothered by this. And he said, you just had two animals of every species. There weren't two Labradors and two Poodles and two German Shepherds. There were two dogs. And subspecies came later. I know, there's a lot of species. There's another view that you'll find in traditional sources that says the flood did not cover the whole world. The flood covered the populated area, I guess we call it Mesopotamia. That's where man, that's where civilization was. And the flood was there. Okay, the source points to the fact that the Gemara says there was no flood in Yerushalayim, in Eretz Yisrael. So need not have been everywhere. Then we have to worry about how kangaroos were in Australia. They were just created in Australia. And they stayed there and they were never killed. And this is another view that you can find. But it's not the predominant view. Neither is the Netziv. And according to the predominant view, miraculously, somehow all the animals went in and they just kept going in and there was space for all the animals. And this is part of the miracle. Now, he was told to build it. With his sons. How long did it take him? Anyone remember? 120 years. It's a long time. Okay, long time. What was going on this 120 years? People got saying, yo, what are you guys doing? You're working on this for years. We're building an ark. Why are you building an ark? Oh, the world's going to be destroyed. Really? Like, you know, how long have you been working on this? About 75 years. Okay. You know, but they kept telling everyone, right? This is all part of it. They were involved, taking all the criticism, all the questions, you know, like the people that walk around in Manhattan, doomsday is coming, like people go, okay, yeah, we'll believe in you, right? And that's what Noah did it because God said to do it. Now, how many animals came to the ark? How many animals do we have? Okay. So, one pair of each animal, tame or tahor, but the tahor animals had an extra six pairs. The Ramban says the one pair, male and female, they came on their own because that was needed to, preservation of the species. But Noah had to go out and retrieve the other six pairs of tahor animals that were going to be brought as korbanot. Okay, this is the view of the Ramban. This was all pre-flood. Now, anyone know what year did the flood start? And you know how old Noah was when the flood started? Anyone know what parasha we're talking about? Okay, no, fine. Noah was 600 years when the flood starts, and the year, according to Seder Olam Rabbah, is 1656. 1656, the flood begins, and we're told in the Chumash on the 17th of the second month. What's the second month? Iyar. What else could the second month be?
Cheshvan.
Right? There is a machlokas if we're talking about the first month being Tishrei or Nisan. Ordinarily, what do we consider the first month to be?
Tishrei.
It depends who we are. We Jews consider the first month of the year to be Nisan. Sort of weird that we have Rosh Hashanah on the seventh month, but it is what it is. And you could, you know, do some work on this over Rosh Hashanah. The seventh month of the year we have Rosh Hashanah. But Nisan is considered our first month. Why is Nisan considered the first month? Because God redid the calendar because that became the most important month for us because what happened in Nisan?
Yitzias
Mitzrayim. And therefore, one could argue pre-Yitzias Mitzrayim, what would be the first month? Tishrei, because that's what happened in Tishrei. The world was created. Okay? So that is one view. But like I said, there is another view that says the way people here said, that no, once the Torah decides that Nisan is the first month, even when we're going back in time, we're going to talk about the second month. The second month is Iyar. Okay. So there are two views. Just be aware of it. Someone had their hand up?
Yeah. Adam was born on Rosh Hashanah.
Adam was born on Rosh Hashanah. Correct. So Hayom Haras Olam does not mean that the world was created. It was that Adam was created. The world was created on Chaf Hei Elul. And Adam was created on the first of Tishrei. Possibly. Yes. According to tradition, yes. 5783 this week. Yes. It's Chaf Hei Elul tomorrow night? Yeah, tomorrow night. So the world's created 5783 years ago, at least according to Seder Olam Rabbah, according to using that method, tomorrow night.
Okay.
Have a little party. Yeah. Now, it rained for how long? 40 days and 40 nights. And then the Torah says that the water was still rising and the ark was still floating for another 150 days. Machlokas is another 150 days, or the 40 days are part of that 150. And then the water begins to recede. Every animal other than the fish, they were killed except for what was on the ark. Fish, water animals were saved. Now, on the 10th month, Noah sends a raven, according to the Radak, because the raven is one of those animals that will be looking for the carcasses. There should be lots of carcasses on the ground now if everyone died. And we see the raven come back after, you know, with some carcass in his mouth, so then we'll know that there's dry land. But the raven returns without anything. He then sends... in Hebrew, it's called an orev. I don't know if you know Hebrew better than English. I don't know, an orev. Okay, fine. Now, he then sends the yonah. He starts sending the yonah every 7 days, the dove, until it doesn't return. On the 27th day of the second month, they disembark. So altogether, how long are they on the ark? A year and 10 days. Now, a year, a Jewish year, it's a very easy way to remember it. It's 355 days. How do you remember that? What's the gematria of Shana? 355. So 355 days plus another 10. When the flood began on the 17th of the second month, and now on the 27th, so it's a year and 10 days, and what do we get? 365, we get a solar year. So they were on the ark for now one solar year. From Yud Zayin of the second month to Chav Zayin of the second month, and then they finally disembark. Number three. Why was there a flood? So the Gemara tells us that even though Gilui Arayos and Avodah Zarah were both rampant, that's not the reason why we had the flood. Okay? And the Gilui Arayos was Gilui Arayos with bestiality, right? What was the reason for the flood? What was the straw that broke the camel's back? Stealing. Okay, what's the word that's used in the Gemara? It begins with a chet. There's a terrorist group that's named the same thing. Hamas. There we go. Hamas. Hamas is bad, no matter how you look at it. Okay. Now, Gezel is what seals the deal. Why? So I saw one idea that was very interesting. There's an element of Gezel in all three cardinal sins. When I commit adultery, I'm stealing someone's wife. When I commit murder, I'm stealing someone's life. And when I'm Ovid Avodah Zarah, I am stealing the kavod that is due to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Gezel is a, you know, part of these three sins. Another idea that I saw, which is maybe more important for us, you know, if I were to ask you what's the worst of the Ten Commandments, what would you say? Any ideas? Worshiping other gods. Okay, any other ideas? Yeah? Lashon Hara. It's not one of the Ten Commandments. It's very bad, yeah? Killing sounds bad. There are many Mefarshim that say the tenth, Lo Tachmod, which just means not to be like jealous and covet your friend's stuff. Which, you know, I don't know, if I would have been making a list, I probably would have had that as the 10th. Oh, someone did. That is a 10th. Oh, anyway, even though that came in number 10, some people move it to the top of the list. What's so bad about lo tachmod? So the idea is, lo tachmod, according to some, Hamas is stealing even when it's not worth a shava pruta. Meaning, I'm not even getting hana. I'm just doing evil for evil's sake. I'm just messing with him. Lo tachmod is I want his wife. I don't want to marry a woman because my friend got married. I want his wife. I don't want to have a car. I want his car. I want one he has because he has it. I want to take it away. Evil for evil's sake. That's what Hamas was. When society takes liberties without justification, when even law-abiding citizens cut corners with their insurance and taxes and commit all sorts of white-collar crimes, this ruins the fabric of society. And as we know, Chotamo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what is the seal of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Anyone know? Emet. Emes. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is all about. Right? Rabbeinu stresses over and over here in Yeshiva. You have to be honest. And these people weren't. Someone had their hand. You had your hand up.
No.
The Meshech Chachma. You have your hand up. Yeah, Theo.
So I didn't understand the connection between the flood and the fact that.
Isn't there a difference between
the flood?
The flood.
And the fact that they were senior.
That they were.
They made a mistake.
I'm going to get to that. Thank you. Now, the Meshech Chachma brings up now what Theo just brought up. Meshech Chachma says, once again, if I was judging and I look at the two major sins of Parshat Noach, I would have thought that the second sin is way worse. The first sin we said is they're stealing. I'm going to the Shuk, and I'm pulling out one, you know, peanut from the stand over there. I'm pulling out one raisin. You know, they sell it by the kilo, and I'm taking one. All right, is that a big deal? What's the second sin that we have at the end of the parasha? Oh, they build a tower to rebel against God. I don't know. You were to ask me, rebelling against God, taking a raison? Doesn't sound like it's a tough one to me. I would think rebelling against God is worse, right? Theo, you thought that, right? And yet, when is the world destroyed? Oh, because they took raisins and peanuts. And when is it not? Oh, when they rebel against God. So says the Meshech Chachma, very important idea. While it's true as an individual, it's far worse for us to rebel against God than to take a raisin from somebody. When it comes to punishing a tzibor, a community, God cares more about the way I act to my fellow human being. Then Adam Lechavero is far worse. And therefore, a community can suffer. Okay, I remember I was very upset. I just learned this Meshech Chachma. And there was, like, you know, some terrorist act on a bus. Some suicide bomber, I think, like, pulled the driver. The bus went off a cliff. A lot of people got killed. Other people got injured. And some person wrote an article in the paper and said, you know why this happened? I hate when people say, I know, like they know. Okay? You know why this happened? Because of the Chilul Shabbos. And I was thinking, wow. Meshech Chachma just said, no, Dafki, you know why it's happening? Because you're writing articles about like this in the newspaper. That's why it's happening. Because you're pointing fingers at other people and saying, because he's bad. That's why it's happening. Because we're not getting along with each other. That's why it's happening. It's not because someone's Mechal Shabbos. Yeah, maybe the Mechal Shabbos guy is going to be punished more severely. But when a community gets punished, says the Meshech Chachma, it's when we are not keeping the mitzvahs benam lechaver. And he gives a few examples. He says, just look in the Torah. Okay, in Tanakh, we point out that the generation of David HaMelech, where there was no Avodah Zarah, they lost wars. But in the generation of Ahav, one of the worst kings, married to Izebel, one of the worst queens, they never lost a war. Why? Because in the time of David, no one snitched. No one informed on other Jews and ratted them out and got them in trouble. In the time of Achan, no one did it. In the time of David, they did. Right? We know that when David was running from Shaul, we had the Zifim or Doeg, you know, telling Shaul, oh, David did this, here he is. You know, people were informants. And that's considered worse. Another proof. Bayit Rishon. Avodah Zarah is rampant. How long is Gullus? 70 years. Bayit Sheni, what's the sin for Bayit Sheni? Sinat Chinam. And we're 1900 years plus and counting. And in our parsha, the Malbla verse, the Dor HaFlaga, Kadosh Baruch Hu seems to judge Ben Adam L'Chavero, if he's looking at a community, more harshly than he does Ben Adam L'Makom. Fourth idea, leaving the ark. Okay? Noach brings a carbon. He gets drunk. He gets naked. And according to the Pasuk, it's very strange, Ham, one of his three sons, we have Shem, Ham, and Yafet, Ham sees him, does something, not clear right now, tells his brothers come in and cover him up, and when Noach gets up, he blesses those who covered him up, and he curses, not who we'd expect, not Ham, but who? Knan, Ham's son. The son of Ham, Knan ben Ham. Why? I mean, like, it's a little bit odd. So, some want to say it was really Knan that did whatever it was done. Two opinions that Rashi bring down. Either he castrated Noach while he was naked, or he sodomized Noach while he was naked. Neither of them, you know, would either any of us want actually to happen. And this was done to Noach. And according to one opinion, it was actually Knan that did it. But his father, Ham, looked on, didn't stop him. So Ham's the one that told his siblings what happened. And therefore, it's appropriate that Knan be cursed, because Knan's the one that perpetrated the deed. Others say that maybe it was, you know, actually Ham that did it. And Knan was watching, and maybe he should have told his father, Dad, what are you doing to Grandpa? You know, but either way, it's a little bit weird. Here's this fascinating idea. I'll tell you a very cool idea. Rav Yaakov Meidan, Rosh Yeshiva in Shiva Har Etzion. I have a bunch of his svarim. He said, this is what happened. Okay, if anyone ever learned Sefer Shmuel, so we know that when Avshalom wanted to rebel against his father in order to prove that he was really the king, his advisor said, sleep with your father's Pilag Shem. Good. And when Adoniah, he declares himself king until David gets in the way and makes Shlomo the king, Adoniah says to Shlomo, his brother, well, can I at least have as a consolation prize, you know, Avishaga Shunamit, who was the concubine of David. And Shlomo says, yeah, why don't you take my throne? Because what's the idea? Who can sleep with the king's wife? Only another king. This would be your way of usurping the throne. It's like, I'm the new king. So now what do we have? We have Noach. Here he is. He's 600 years old. The flood's 601. The flood's over. And what does he do? He gets himself drunk. He doesn't act like a leader. He's post-Holocaust. And he doesn't want to go on. And he's just drinking himself silly. So what does Ham do? Ham says, someone's got to take the leadership role. I'm going to do it. It's not clear who the oldest brother is anyway. We're not really sure. Ham says, I'm going to do it. How am I going to do it? Listen to this idea. He sleeps with Noah's wife. And his way of staking his claim. I'm the new leader. And therefore, the son that is born to Ham and Noah's wife is who? Knan. And you think that through this son you're going to now show that you're the new leader? Wrong. You know I'm cursing? Cursing Knan. I'm cursing Knan. Okay? So.
Did Noah have multiple wives?
Was that his mom? It would be his mom. Mistama would be his mom. Okay? Yeah. So this is Rav Meidan's idea. I think it's a fascinating idea. I did see in the Dot Mikra, in a footnote in the Dot Mikra, there's a similar idea there as well. And there, the assumption was that it happened on the Ark. That he did it on the Ark. And either way, two different people say this idea. I find it a fascinating idea. He's trying to explain why Dafka Kanan is cursed when the Pasuk says that Cham did something. Okay. Did what?
Did mom know
he was doing? I don't know. See me, he raped her. Now, he lives another 350 years, dies at the age of 950. I'm talking about Noach. We have the genealogy of his three sons. The Abar Ben El says, points out that the ancients believed that there were only three continents, Asia, Africa, and Europe. And the three sons, we have Shem that goes to Asia. We Jews, we're Semites from Asia. Okay, it's very interesting that so are the Arabs, but anti-Semitism is only against Jews. Okay. Ham went to Africa. And Yefet goes to Europe. They had 70 descendants, which are considered the 70 nations. Incidentally, there were 70 members of Yaakov's family that goes down to Egypt. The Kuzari says, because we, Israel, are a microcosm of the whole world. Yeah.
So weren't they history perspective, weren't they Native Americans from Oxfordshire, because they say that they cross from Russia into Alaska, from used to be a land bridge, and then they went into America.
Okay, I don't know where everyone's from. I don't know, maybe. I don't know. Now, when Noah brought the carbon, God promised never to destroy the world again, and he would keep the seasons. Right? Now, the seasons are part of nature, and the world was just upended for a year. Now, the God of nature is restoring order, and therefore, it's appropriate that the name Elohim is used to tell them to leave the ark. Because Elohim, the gematria of Elohim is Hateva, nature. While the name Yudke Vavke was used when they were told to go into the ark, the name of Rachamim to save them. So Rachamim tells them to go in, and Elohim, nature, because now nature is being restored. Let's come back. Yes, sir. Elohim, yeah. In the beginning it said, Yudke Vavke, telling him to go in. The Netziv says the bracha to resume Puruvu. I'm sorry, that was all from the Netziv. That Elohim, that was from the Netziv. Now there's a bracha to resume having children. Okay, go back and have Puruvu. And there's permission to eat meat. Okay, up until this time, you weren't allowed to eat meat. So I once said this in my shul. My wife, who's like a vegetarian, was not happy with this. But like I said, what was the sin of the Dor HaMabul? Doesn't really say. Like Chazal tells Hamas, you know, that you all said. But I said, we have to look at what was going on before, what was going on afterwards. So beforehand, we weren't allowed to eat meat. What's Noach told right after he comes out of the ark? You could eat meat. So it must be the sin was that they were vegetarians. I said this in my shul. My wife's not so thrilled with this. And I said, why? Because what's wrong with being a vegetarian? Nothing wrong with being a vegetarian. I said, but mankind started to treat animals as equals. And that's why they started to sleep with them. That's the part she didn't really like that I said in shul. She goes, there are kids here. You talk about bestiality. But whatever. I wanted to get a point across. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's an idea. Throwing it out there. Now, you're allowed to eat meat except for Avram and Achai. And that's when we now get Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. We know that there are Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. What most people don't know is that God didn't just decide at the time of Noach in the year 1657 to make laws. He gave it to Adam. But by Adam, there were only six. Why did he not need the seventh? Because the seventh is, don't eat Avram and Achai. Don't rip a limb off the animal and eat it. Because Adam couldn't eat any animal. There was no need for Avram and Achai. So it was only when we were permitted to eat meat that we now have a seventh mitzvah of Avram and Achai. Now, God makes a covenant. And what's the sign of the covenant?
The rainbow.
So here you have a machlokas. According to the Ibn Ezra, This is a new phenomenon. There were never, ever rainbows before this. And he proves it. He says, look, you look in Pirkei Avot, it says 10 things were created ben hashmashot, between and ben hashmashot of Shabbos and the original week of creation. And these are things that are going to happen later on. So, sometime later, there was going to be a rainbow. This is the Ibn Ezra. The Ramban says, no, of course, rainbows were there. It's a natural phenomenon. It has to do with the water in the air and the sunlight. And it, of course, there were rainbows. But now it became a covenant. And it wasn't a covenant before. The Abarbanel says, because of cosmic changes, now people could see the rainbow. The rainbow was there. But now people were able to see the rainbow. The reflection of the Shekhinah, according to the Abarbanel. And Rav Meidan, who often has interesting ideas, said, look, think about what's going on. Everywhere they looked, there were waterfalls. Because the rain had ceased, went down, but there was water from a high place flowing down. And if the sun was shining, basically by every place you were seeing rainbows, rainbows, rainbows. So rainbows became the covenant. It wasn't like one rainbow in the sky. It was like rainbows everywhere. Okay. Interesting idea. Yes.
Nowadays, how do we look at the rainbow? Are they supposed to be like, if it's like in a certain place that it gets to be? Like, in that place?
The rainbow is a sign that God decided he's not going to destroy us, which means it's a sad thing. It means that God was upset enough to destroy us, but only because he promised he won't, we weren't destroyed. That's why you're not supposed to like stare at a rainbow. You can take a quick look and make a bracha. You're not supposed to stare at it because it's really not a great sign. That's why there's a midrash that says in two different generations there was never any rainbow, and that's because God never wanted to destroy them, right? I think it was Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, and I can't remember right now the other person. Okay. Now, then we get to what Theo brought up before, Migdal Bavel. So we said 1656 was the year of the flood. Anyone know the year of the Tower of Babel? 1996. Again, obviously, I'm saying 1996 from the time of creation. Anyone know what year Avram Avinu was born from the time of creation? 1948. All you non-Zionists. 1948. Avram Avinu was born. Okay. I don't know if it means anything, counting from the Gaisha calendar, but whatever it is, it's still cool. 1948, which means that at the time of Migdal Bavel, Avram was 48 years old. Right? He was 48 years old. Now, at this time, everyone spoke one language, and in a valley of Shinar, which is in Bavel, they wanted to make a name for themselves. And God foils their plan and mixes up their language, hence the name Bavel, which means like mixture, and scatters them upon the earth. Now, what was their sin? Doesn't say. Right? The same way we looked for the, Noah and tried to figure out what their sin was, and we had the end of Bereshit that men were taking women and stuff like that. God was not upset, was not happy. It's very hard to figure out what the people did wrong by Migdal Bavel. So Rashi says they wanted to build a tower and rebel against God. And it happens today as well. We do the exact same thing. Our generation rebels against God. How? With technology and science. We give it more credence than we do God. And maybe this is just my own idea, but maybe that's what Corona is trying to teach the world. That we don't know everything that we think we know. And no one could figure out what to do. People thought, oh, this will go away by itself, and no one knew how it was traveling. Like, we're not as smart as we think we are. I don't know. But definitely, in many of our communities, if the Torah says something, people go, eh? But if science says it, they go, oh, well, science says it. So we've also turned things into Avodah Zarah. Or another idea that I came across, they were anthro-centered. What is anthro? Man. They were supposed to care about God and make God the focus of their world. But instead, I saw you looking at a Chumash before. If you read the first few psukim, it keeps talking about, we'll do this, we'll do this, we'll. It's all about us. What's in it for me? Right? Let's make a name for ourselves. We'll be great. It's like the opposite of Avraham Avinu, who was trying to teach everybody how great God was. Everywhere Avraham was, he would make, name this thing about God, you know? Name this God, right? Always talking about trying to get people to focus on God. Well, these people are all about me, my name. Now listen to this beautiful idea. If you forget everything that I told you except for this one idea, it was worth coming tonight for this one idea. I came across this in the Siva Shalom. Says the very famous Mishnah we all know from Pirkei Avot. Hakina v'taiva v'kava notzinas adam min olam. What's kina? Jealousy. What's ta'ava? Desires. What's kavod? Seeking honor. This is what removes a person from the world. It says in the Siva Shalom, these were the three sins. Kina, where do we see it? Cain and Hevel. The jealousy that Cain had towards Hevel. Taiva, that's the mabul. Whether it be doing their sexual sins or the chamas taking away, taking what other people had, giving in to their desires. And kavod, right now, the Migdal Bavel. My honor is what is at stake. How do I combat kina taiva v'kavod? Says in the Siva Shalom, from Torah, Avoda, and Gemilut Chasadim. And this is represented by the three Avot. Torah is Yaakov, and Avoda is Yitzchak, and Gemilut Chasadim is Avram Avinu. And that's why we now lead in from Noach into the stories of the Avot to combat the Kinetayv and Kavod. We have Gemilut, Torah, Avoda, and Gemilut Chasadim. Isn't that a beautiful idea? Isn't that cool? Matan, it was worth coming, right? Okay. When I found that, I was, that's so cool. Now, last idea. The kina, taiva, and kavod were the three sins. The kina's kain and hevel. Okay? The tava is the mabul, and the kavod is the migdal bavel. Look at me. What's the antidote? How do I combat that? The Torah, avod, and gemilat chasadim is represented by Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, and that's why the story now moves into our avot that combat these sins that drive us out of the world. How do we stay here? How do we make the most of it? We follow the example of our forefathers. It's pretty cool, no?
Yeah.
Okay. Last section. We end with the genealogy from Noach to Avram Avinu. The average age, average lifespan is about 300, and they have like their kids around the age of 30. Now the truth is, Peleg, that's what's called Dor HaFlaga. What does Peleg mean? What does Plag Mincha mean? Middle, split. So Peleg lived at the time that there was a split, and it's also even a split in the ages. Up until Peleg, they pretty much lived to about 400. After Peleg, they sort of lived to the age of 200. I told, it's about 300. But it's sort of 400 and 200. So why? The who said this? The Sforno. The Sforno says, with the dispersion, after Migdal Bavel, they now go to climates that they're not familiar with, and therefore there's a shorter lifespan. Interesting. Okay? It does happen. I don't know if that's the thing. I don't know enough. I just found that interesting. It's 400, goes down to 200. How's that happen? I said, maybe. Different climates brings down the lifespan. Oh, no? Thought it was interesting. Now, Avram actually overlaps with Noach. Okay? Noach, we said, was born 1056. He lived 950 years. I was born in 1948. So he overlapped. How many years did he overlap? 58 years. What's the gematria of 58? What's the gematria of 50? Nun. What's the gematria of 8? Noach. How many years did Avram overlap with Noach?
Yes.
Noach years. Yes, 58 years, Noach years. The Abarabinel points out, it's pretty cool, no? Okay, the Abarabinel points out that from Adam Arishon until Matan Torah, if I go by the people that lived long and overlapped, we usually say there's 26 generations. 10 from Adam to Noach, 10 from Noach to Avram, and then 6 from Avram to get to Moshe. But, says the Abarabinel, you can do it in 7. 7 generations. Because Adam lives all the way up into the overlaps in Lemach. Lemach lives long enough to overlap with Noach. Noach lives long enough, he said, to overlap with Avram. Avram lives long enough to overlap with Yaakov. Yaakov to Kahat, Kahat to Moshe. 7 generations. I span 2,448 years. Not bad with the overlaps. Okay. Yeah.
Wait, Yaakov
when Avram, Yaakov was alive when Avram was alive. Yeah. The first Rashi there says that they were 15 years old. The beginning there, when Esav comes to them famished, says they just buried Avram. And that's why he's making lentil soup. Right? Okay. Last idea. Noach, you have a question? Okay. Noach ends with, I'm sorry, Parsha Noach ends with Terach picking up his family and traveling from Or Kasdim and going to Eretz Yisrael. But he doesn't make it all the way there. He stops temporarily in Haran. But there's nothing more permanent than a temporary stop. And Haran, like some of your families, decided to stop temporarily on your way to Israel. Unfortunately, you've been out of Israel so many generations. But Avraham, he actually goes to next week's parsha. So while your families might have stayed, Be'ezrat Hashem, you won't be like Terach, you'll be like Avraham, and you'll actually make it here. Be'ezrat Hashem Yisbarach. All right, thank you very much, guys. Worth it, Shalom. Just in the